Hey, everybody, this is Kid Cash, former ECW World Television Champion, and you're listening to This Is Extreme.
Beat me if you can survive if I let you.
Let the new era begin, the era of the ECW.
Oh, my God.
Greetings and welcome, ECW fans, to This Is Extreme, the ECW history podcast that dives deep into the history of Extreme Championship Wrestling by interviewing those that were there, associated, worked for, helped, whatever it may be. We'll interview them. We got a great interview on today's show. We have former ECW television champion Kid Cash on the show today. A great interview, hour long, over an hour long. Talks about, primarily ECW, but man, David Cash had a great career even outside of ECW, and we talk a little about those things. Some of it may surprise you, right? A lot of people who are primarily familiar with Kid Cash from ECW may not, you know, be aware of some of his non-ECW accomplishments. And he's a great worker, great guy. Had fun talking to him, and hope to talk to him again in the future. One bit of housekeeping, or whatever you want to call it, news that I need to take care of. I don't know if it'll still be happening by the time this is released, but I am having a little trouble with the ECW Pod X account, the Twitter, formerly Twitter. We had a recent post, or whatever you want to call it now. I don't know what you call them. That was, you know, had a lot of likes, a lot of shares. I was following, you know, a lot of people back on that, trying to, you know, network, trying to grow the account or whatever else. But apparently I liked too many in too short a time. They locked the account due to suspicious activity, and I'm having trouble getting it unlocked. I've got, you know, whatever, form submissions in to X to try to get it. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know whether they will unlock it, whether I'll be able to do it, whether it's just lost for eternity. I don't know. But as of now, I do not have access to the X account. Don't know what's going to happen with that. If that is your primary means of following us, you may want to follow some of our other outlets on social media. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at ECW Pod. So you might want to follow us there so that you can keep abreast on my posts and everything else, because I'm not sure what's happening with the old X account. So there, just a little bit of news, podcast news right up front. But let's get past that. Let's get on to bigger and better and brighter things. And take a quick break, and when we come back, we will have that interview with Kid Cash, so stick around. Be sure to follow This Is Extreme on all social media platforms. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for ECW Pod. Be sure to follow us, keep up to date, and join in the discussions. We want to hear your feedback, so find us on all the social media platforms and join the revolution. All right, and welcome back to This Is Extreme. At this time, I'm joined by a former ECW television champion, Kid Cash, or as he's known now, just David Cash. David, how are you?
Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing very good. I appreciate you making time and talking to us and talking about your time in ECW. Let's start out with a few things. I read that your dad was a boxer when you were a kid, and that you boxed also when you were young. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, my dad was in the Navy. He was in he was a Navy SEAL through the Vietnam era, and he did seven tours. So his last little tour, when he came back, he actually was trying to go back. So he re-signed, and they put him stateside. So he joined the Naval Boxing Team, and from there he got out of the Navy 4 years later, and. He signed up for another 4 years. Yeah, so 4 years of the boxing, and then he went to United States Boxing League. It used to be called the USBA. I don't know if anybody ever remembers that, but that was kind of like the the amateur, I guess, the NPC to the IFBB. So he did really well there, and he got him a couple of pro spots. And stuff, but I started boxing at the age of seven. And he started me off. And then from there, I just kind of joined the YMCA in my local town and continued boxing from there. Did a lot of amateur, did the Teenage Golden Gloves twice, won both of them twice, one in Virginia, one in Maryland. Did martial arts. I didn't exactly play football, baseball, and all that stuff in school. So I kept to my boxing and then started wrestling in school. Really liked that. And then started transitioning over to some Krav Maga and some Aikido. And from there, of course, it branches out over the years, doing a little bit of Muay Thai, a little bit of jiu-jitsu, and, things of that. So still do. And
Yeah.
still train, still try to stay healthy at this point.
And at some point, it says you were trained by Ricky Morton, Tim Horner. When did you, how did that happen? How did you run into those guys? Where was that connection made?
In my home, I ran into Tim Horner first in my hometown, him and the Road Warriors. I was actually working out at the gym, and they were having a local show there at the fairgrounds, and a bunch of the guys from Smoky Mountain Wrestling came, and then there was a couple of other guys, like Terry Funk and the Road Warriors. They came as well. But yeah, we had Killer Kyle and Tim Horner, and guys, let's see, Anthony Michaels, Brian Logan. Yeah, there was some guys, definitely from the Smoky there. But anyway, that's how I met Tim first, just in the dressing room, and we were at the gym. And my most of my youth, so many people thought I looked like Owen Hart, or if it wasn't Owen Hart, it was Brian Pillman. And I was like, okay, so they actually approached me in the gym, and he was like, "Hey man, has anybody ever told you look like Owen Hart?" And I was like, "Yeah, all the time, He invited me to the show, got backstage, and stuff, hung out with the guys pretty much. I didn't even watch the wrestling show. I hung out the back pretty much the whole entire night. And one of the Road Warriors, Hawk, needed a dip, and he dipped Copenhagen like I did. So he asked me for one, and I gave him my can, and he took pretty much the whole entire can, in one dip.
Yeah,
And
sounds
but they did like two or three shows that weekend, so I went to the next one. And me and Tim just really hit it off really well. We just had like really great conversation. We didn't even talk wrestling or anything. We just talked, every day, stuff. I was a pipe welder at that time, and he wanted to know about my industry, and I was telling him about him, mine, and he was telling me about his, and that. And then Road Warrior Hawk came in to the next show, and he was like, "I was hoping you would be here." And he said, "I need to pay you back. You saved my life yesterday." And he gave me a whole container, which is like, yeah, it was like 12 of those bastards, and I was like, "No, I don't need all of that. I only gave you one gift." He goes, "No, brother." He goes, "I'm a big dipper, so yeah, you need to take this, because if I ask you anymore, I'll probably take all you got." And it, which that moment, he remembered, because 10 years later I saw him down the road, and he instantly remembered me, and couldn't believe that I'd gotten in the wrestling business and that stuff. But Tim is the one who actually kind of like started it, and then there was like a local guy there in my town. But I got Tim's number and all that other stuff. Doug Ward, Marvin Ward, had a little wrestling camp there at that same building. He used to do jobs for WCW, and I think he was trained by Ivan Koloff back in the day when there was guys that were just trained to be jobbers back in the NWA days. He was one of those guys. I think the story goes he was doing tapings down in Atlanta or something, and they took him off the card and made him a referee. And I guess because he wasn't big enough, really, he was just he was my size basically, but no muscle tone at all, just kind of a heavy set boy, chunky, but he wasn't very tall, or anything. He definitely didn't have the wrestler look or anything like that. So they made him a referee, and he got offended by it and went home. And I guess him and his dad started their own little wrestling organization. And to be honest with you, the guy did a great job. I mean, when he was being honest, but he would really, he was a good promoter. I mean, for a small town guy like that,
But him and Preston Fitzgerald, you know, got me in the ring, like in the, it was like one night, two nights maybe. Just felt what it like to take a bump, you know, showed me how to hit a rope, you know. And the stuff that they actually showed me in those 2 days wound up being absolutely wrong when I left and went to Tim Horner. But that's how it started. I started with Tim. So I called Tim. It interested me enough to try it anyway, you know. Uh-huh. And so I called Tim, and Tim invited me down. And I became good friends with Anthony Michaels and Brian Logan, too. So they did local independent wrestling shows in Johnson City, Morristown, Knoxville, and things like that. So they actually got me on, and I was like, I've never wrestled before. You know, don't worry about it. We'll guide you. And they did, you know. It wasn't the greatest match ever, but it you know, I was very shocked that it, you know, it turned out the way it did, you know. And and from there, that's when I met Ricky Morton, and met him at a local indie show there in Tennessee. And next thing you know, him and I, just like Tim, just really hit it off. I mean, nothing about wrestling, you know. It was always just conversation, you know. And they liked me because they just looked at me as a normal guy. And I found out later on, once I got full time into the wrestling business, how they felt, because, you know, you go to these shows and you go to all these towns, you know, these cities, all these buildings and stuff. And the only thing that comes out of most people's mouths is wrestling. That's it. That's all you talk about the entire time you're on the road. Basically, when you get home, I mean, you think about it. I mean, you know, all your friends think it's cool that you're a pro wrestler wrestling for ECW and all these other companies. So they want to talk wrestling. So there becomes a little period of your life where you don't really have any conversation about anything else other than wrestling.
Yeah.
And, you know, but that's kind of what you need. If you're going to succeed, you have to be able to make it part of your entire life.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be able to do the shows, to do every single show. You know, even those ones on Wednesdays that only pay $5, you know, because you just got to get your name out there. And I did many of those the first couple of years, you know, just doing shows for $5, $10, $15, $20, you know, driving 2, 3, 4, 5 hours for that money. But then Ricky, just, I don't know. Him and Robert had issues again. And like they did many, many times over the years. And he just approached me one night in the dressing room, and he was like, "Hey, man," he goes, "how would you like to, you know, do some tag teaming with me?" And I was like, "Absolutely," you know. And so that's kind of how it went. I mean, he could see that I was as green as they come. And so he was like, "You got talent." He goes, "You just don't know how to put a match together. You got the athleticism. You definitely have the look. You just got to be able to have the psychology and the know-how, how to, you know, read a crowd and put a match together. And I'll show you that." And he did. So first year I sat in the car, really, you know, just watching all of his matches, carrying his bags, and, you know, just, you know, whatever he said, I did, you know?
Yeah.
And, kind of just one night, we were in, that was Jonesboro, Arkansas, for Burt Prentice. I don't know if you know who he is.
But, I do. Yep.
But back then it was called Ozark Mountain Wrestling. And yep. Greg Valentine was on the show. He no-showed, couldn't make it or something like that. So they needed a stand-in, and Ricky automatically, you know, threw my name in there. I got in there, had a good, really, really good match. And, they impressed, and that's where it started. And then from right then there, the very next week, he had me and him tag teaming together. And then we went on as the new Rock and Roll Express for probably about 2.5 years. And of course, Robert came back into the picture, and we did some 6-man tags here and there. And then I would go down to Florida and tag with Robert from time to time. And then it was just time for me to go out on my own.
Yeah, there is not many guys better to learn from than Ricky Morton. Just to watch. I mean, probably if not the greatest, one of the top three greatest sellers of all time.
Absolutely.
Steamboat, maybe. But
well, I felt I had to hit the jackpot in that circumstance, because I mean, it was not only just Rick. You know, Ricky was the main guy, you know, who gave me all the information, things like that. But I was also trained by Robert.
I was also trained by Jerry the King Lawler, you know, the Honky Tonk Man, the Jimmy Hart, because these are the guys that would ride with us to the shows. You know, I mean, we would pick guys that we would go to Memphis and do Memphis TV there. And then we would all gather up in the car together and go do the house shows for Memphis. You know, we would go to Jonesboro, Arkansas, Pocahontas, Arkansas, Cape Girardeau, Missouri, you know, just keep, you know, just hitting the circuit for them. And then back to Memphis for the Mid-South Coliseum on the last night of the week for the big show, you know? So I was in the, man, I was in the car with the Moondogs. I was in the car with, like I said, you know, the Honky Tonk Man, Sid Vicious. I mean, I shared many, many, many rides with all these guys for probably a total of about 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
And just the information, and everybody's different, you know, and that's what Ricky always told me. He said, don't just wrestle the way I teach you. You know, he says, get your information from as many people as you can, and whatever is fitting you the best and fits your character, fits your look, fits your, you know, your style, then that's what you run with.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. I just picked a little bit of everybody. And if you ever watch me, I got some Dynamite Kid in me. I got some Shawn Michaels in me. I got Ricky Morton in me, a little bit of Ricky Steamboat in me, some of Bret Hart in me, you know. So I throw it out there. I like, you know, that aggressive style. So the era that I came into was still a little bit on the aggressive side where you really got hit, you know, you got. You didn't get hit with everything, but you got hit, you know, and you knew that it was there.
Yeah.
You know, you walked out of the ring with a black eye from time to time. You walked out of the ring with a busted nose and a bloody lip, you know, or, you know, just something, you know, cracked rib, you know, just because, you know, it was stiff. And to me, that was the best way for me to sell. If you want me to sell like Ricky Morton, I can't, but I need you to give him to lay it in. And then I can sell like I'm going to the electric chair.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And that's, I think that might be part of the reason why you excelled there in ECW, why you worked in ECW, because I've always thought ECW is just, it's just Memphis just turned up a few notches. And it's a, you know, that, I mean, obviously, you know, Paul Heyman had that Memphis style, you know, came through Memphis. Obviously, Eddie Gilbert, you booked early ECW, came through Memphis. I think they took what Memphis was doing and just brought it to the new era, brought it to the new decade.
They did, but they didn't let the boys know it. They wanted the boys to have their own identities and stuff. So the boys was there. Whenever I was there, I had two runs with them, one in like late 95 to about very early 97, and then I broke my leg real bad.
Yeah.
I had to take about a year off, a little over a year. And then when I went back in like 98, late 98, it was about to be 99. And but everybody was still about the Japanese and the Mexico style up there. So the extreme Japanese style wrestling was still pretty big, and the, you know, the extreme high flying of the Mexicans and stuff like that. So when I went there, I noticed that for me to stand out, that I had to pull the South out. You know, I can do every single one of the moves that every single of these people are doing. There's not a move in there that I couldn't do. There's not a hold that I couldn't put on, but I noticed that their selling was a lot like Japan. They would take a couple of chair shots, you know, and when the guy turns his back to, you know, to cheer the crowd or boo the crowd or whatever, you know, by the time he turns back around, the guy's up, you know. So I wanted to change that for my style. I wanted to stand out, and luckily my style did stand out enough to where Paul was like, there's something different about this kid. So he had a conversation with me after my first night there. And he was like, definitely tell you're from the South. He goes, you know, the guy only kicked you on a lockup and you sold it. Like, you know, the guy just, you know, was about to make you puke. And I was like, well, the guy is like logically 6 foot fucking nine. He's like 280 pounds. I'm 5 foot nine and I'm only 175 pounds. So I just, I kind of do what makes logic, you know, makes the best logic, you know. And he really enjoyed that. And he was like, "That keep doing what you're doing." So we did that for a couple of months. And one night I went into Jim Thorpe up in Pennsylvania. And Raven was putting on a class. and the dressing room with all the young guys like Dorian, Roadkill, Chetty, all the guys, Nova, all these guys. And what they were doing is they were watching because of the matches that I had been having, and plus I had one the week before with Mike Awesome. Mike wasn't even used to my selling because he literally just got off the plane from Japan. So he wasn't used to people selling for him. He was used to just go, 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 go. And same scenario, would go to lock up. He boots me. This guy's 6'9", 300 pounds. I sold it like I was going to the electric chair. You know, yep. I mean, it was just couldn't breathe. I was throwing up, you know, that kind of thing, you know, the whole act and stuff. And then throughout the whole entire match, I mean, what am I going to do to this guy other than slip, you know, dodge and slip under and do some drop kicks to the legs and then maybe a couple of high spots. That's about it, you know. Yeah. So I wanted to get his size over, but I also wanted to be still competitive and stuff, you know. So everything this man did to me, I mean, everything, I just sold it like it was, you know, my last minute in the match, you know.
Yeah.
And Brian, God, what was his name? Fuck. Big Brian. Can't remember his last name. He's one of my good friends. Big Brian. I had the long hair.
Talking about me, Blue Mini?
No, not Brian.
Not that Brian, huh?
Not that Brian. They called him the Doe. He actually came with the Harris Boys a couple of the little tag team, little triple man group there, you know, biker group. Remember the Harris Boys?
Yeah, Brian Adams.
Brian. Well, no, it's not Brian Adams, is it?
Crush?
No, it wasn't Crush. It was Brian. He was in Smoky Mountain Wrestling.
Brian Lee.
Brian Lee. I can't believe. God drove. I can't tell you how many miles we drove up the road to go to last name. But me and Brian were very close. And Brian was a very big guy, just like Mike Awesome. And so we come through the dressing room, and I walk through, and he just grabs him. He goes, "Are you all right, man?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm fine. Why?" And he goes, "Dude, listen, all egos aside, that dude beat the fuck out of you, man. Are you just be serious? Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Dude, I was selling." And he goes, "That wasn't just selling." And I was like, "No, I was selling." He goes, "That motherfucker was shooting on you, man." I was like, "No, he really wasn't. It was all selling." So here comes Mike through the curtain and everything. And he was about ready. He was ready to fight Mike. And he's like, "Man, that's fucked up, man. You'll be doing that." He goes, "What are you talking about, man?" He said, "It blew me away." He goes, "If you notice," he goes, "I stopped a few times because I didn't know, you know, I didn't know what to do because he was selling." And he goes, "So you were just selling that whole thing?" And I was like, "Everything was sold, man. I swear to God." Yeah. Well, Paul, of course, just thought that was the greatest shit ever. You know, he was like, "You're the first dude that has ever made him look like an absolute fucking monster." And, you know, really got it over. Yeah. And I was like, "Well, he's been wrestling Spike Dudley." And he goes, "Yeah, but Spike hasn't been, you know, hasn't been getting him over like that, you know, because Spike fires back so much. You know, he just kept firing back and firing back and firing back. I didn't. I was an old school Southern match. You know, I had my spots whenever I had my whole spots. But the rest of the whole match, he just beat me and threw me all over the fucking place, you know, and I took it. And so, yeah, because of that, Paul was like, "That's just that right there just put him up on another level, you know, as a monster." Yeah. So he had Raven, and Raven got together. So they were back there watching like old Memphis and old UWF tapes from John Tatum, Ted DiBiase, you know, back in the day, you know, Dr. That's Steve Williams, and, you know, Austin Idol, how everybody sold, you know. And I was standing there, and he looked at me and said, "You don't need to be here." I was like, "Oh, okay, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to intrude." And he goes, "No, you're not intruding." He goes, "But you're the reason why we're here, so you don't even need to be here." And I was like, "Oh, okay, well, I'll see you guys." You know? But yeah, so that was my style coming in. I tried to pull out the modern day Southern, you know, storytelling, selling with the modern day high flying and more extreme style of, you know, wrestling, combine it together, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you mentioned, a lot of people don't realize that you had that little run from 95 to 97 in ECW. A lot of people forget that.
Yeah.
And during that time, you worked under all kinds of names, right? David Jericho, David Tyler Morton, Davey Pisano, all these different things. And that almost became your gimmick, right? The name change
it was.
Where the crowd was chanting, "Oh, what's your name? What, how did, was that just a natural kind of development because of the name thing, or?
Well, I came up with them. My name was David Jericho back in 1990. Me and Ricky got it from driving down the interstate in Tennessee and looked over and saw a Jericho Temple Shriners building. And we were just going through names, and I just said the word Jericho, and he's like, Jericho, David Jericho, Jericho Cash. You know, he just, and then he says, I like David Jericho. That's the one we use. And then what, about three years later, that's when Chris started coming out on the scene. Chris Jericho. But yeah, so that was my name up until I went to work up there. And then, so I think Chris Jericho had just left there and he was on his way to WCW or something, and, or back to Japan or somewhere like that. So he literally had just left the company. And when I got there, they had me do David Jericho like the first couple of weeks, but then they said, we need to change your name. And I'm like, all right. So we sat down and thought about it, and I was like, Davey Morton, you know, what a lot of people think that me and Ricky are father and son, you know? Mm-hmm. And he goes, He goes, in my opinion, you're better than Ricky, but in a much different way. And I'm like, okay. So my son's name was Tyler. Mm-hmm. And so he was like, how about Davey Tyler? Oh, that sounds good. Problem is that Sandman's son, Tyler, is in an angle with Raven.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. I was like, well, I'll tell you what, I'll just leave that up to you. So I went to the ring that night, and when I came out to the ring, they called me Davey Morton Tyler Jericho. And so we did that for a couple of good months. And one night they put me with Little Guido. Mm-hmm. And so after the match, and we had a really good match, we meshed really well, and we actually was a really good tag team, you know. And so we had good timing and everything. We read each other well. Paul was like, I think I want you guys to, you know, keep this around for a little bit. And we're like, okay. Came back the following week, and when they called me out to the ring, I was Davey Morton Tyler Jericho Paisano. So, and then that's when the crowd was like, what's your name? But and it was funny is they put it on a shirt. They were going to put Davey Morton Tyler Jericho on the front and then put what's your name on the back. And but then I broke my leg. I wound up breaking my legs, tore my knee out, everything. I had a knee replacement, metal rod put in my leg and ankle.
Yeah, did that happen at that? You worked some TV tapings in WWE. Did that happen there?
No, what happened there was I broke both ankles on a Hurricanrana in a tag team match.
Oh, okay.
At the UTC Arena, yeah. We did, it was me and Poppy Chulo. Mm-hmm. They had interest in me back then. I've been with the WWE so many damn times over the years. they would call me up. You know, they'd be like, hey, we're coming to your area. Would you like to, you know, come and hang out? And I'm like, yeah, sure. I go down, I would talk to them. We'd have serious conversation. They put me on the show. They pay me, send me home. They would do that for years. You know, people, you know, here they come again. But this one particular time, it was like a 4-day run through Tennessee. And the last night was at the UTC Arena in Chattanooga. And we did a great night in Johnson City, did a great night in Nashville, did a great night in Memphis. And then we were having a good night there in Chattanooga. But we did we wrestled Too Much. Yeah, it was Brian Christopher and
Scott Taylor.
Scotty Taylor.
Yeah.
So we went to do the Hurricanranas off the top rope from post to post. And Scotty, for some reason, didn't let go of my legs. And so when we went over into the flip, when we came down, he landed pretty much head and shoulders on the back of both of my ankles. And so he flattened both of them, and I couldn't. I mean, luckily we were going home at that point. We were supposed to win, and but what happened was Brian saw that I was really, really hurt. So, because I was supposed to set, you know, Scotty up for the move, and then here comes Poppy Chulo with his finish, and so here I go to pick him up after the, and as soon as I got his weight in my hands, both of my ankles just curved over and I just fell. So Brian was had the ring, you know, ring general that he was. He ran over there real quick. He kicked me a couple of times, picked me up, slammed me, and then did the Alabama Jam. Mm-hmm. And that was 1, 2, 3. So then I got in the car. I walked all the way back. I would not have anybody carry me. I walked all the way back to the back. Mick Foley and Dustin Rhodes had ice packs in a chair waiting on me. They were very, very cool two guys. And I sat there and iced my stuff down till till the swelling went down a little bit, got my clothes on, got my money. And then I looked up and there was a flight of stairs all the way up to the parking lot.
Oh no.
Yeah. But everybody was kind of standing there watching me too. And I just, you know, with my pride and everything, I was like, no way. Luckily I had a guardrail. So I used a handrail all the way up. And Farouk, Ron Simmons was at the top. He goes, "Hey, brother." He goes, "Great job, man. Don't sell that shit. Don't sell that shit, you know." And then whenever I came through the curtain, and they gave me the ice packs, Dustin Rhodes told me the same thing. He says, "You're hurt, aren't you?" I was like, "Yeah, fucked up both of my ankles." He goes, "Oh, shit." He goes, "Don't sell it, brother. Don't sell it. Just keep moving." I'm like, okay, that's what I did. I didn't sell. I didn't complain to anybody. I didn't say anything to anybody. You know, the guys that are watching the monitor knew, you know, and I'm sure Vince knew too. But as I started walking up the stairs, Vince and, I can't remember that guy's name. Blackjack Lanza. They came walking by me and they stopped me and he goes, "You want to get some help up them stairs?" And I was like, "No, sir, I got it." And he was like, "Are you sure?" And I was like, I'm very sure I got this." Yeah. And I was like, "Thank you so much for having me." And he goes, "Thank you so much for your hard work." And so I just walked on up. They kind of stood there and watched me for about a few seconds, and then they kept on walking, you know. Yeah. But I got to the car in the parking lot. I drove to, where was that? I was in Chattanooga. I think I got to Knoxville and I lived in Johnson City and I was running out of gas. So I had to go get gas. So I had to get out of the car with two broken ankles, walk into the store, pay for my gas, walk back out and then pump the gas. And I still hadn't even changed out of my wrestling outfit yet. It took me close to 50 minutes to get out of the car, walk with no help into the gas station, pay for it. I think I got a drink or two and something to munch on, you know. Then I just one step at a time, just one step, one step, one step, one step. Yeah. And then just got in the car and drove the rest of the way. And when I got home, I called my girlfriend at our apartment, and I was like, "You need to come out and get me." I got home at like 3 o'clock in the morning. She was already in bed, you know, hours ago and stuff, you know. So, so she had to come out and help me out of the car, drag me up to the stairs, get me in. Yeah, got me in bed. Next morning, I woke up and both of my ankles were so swollen I couldn't even see my ankle bones. So, of course, we went to the hospital, come to find out one was broken and the other one was like extremely strained. So, but luckily I had from breaking my leg really bad, had access to an air cast. So I kept that air cast after the broken leg and I used it. I put that son of a bitch on and I put it down in my boot. And then the other leg, I would just tape so damn tight that you couldn't even bend the foot, you know. And I never took a night off.
Oh, man.
When I broke my leg and had my knee replaced and the metal rod put in, I was out a total of 8 weeks. Because I found out that air cast was so supportive that once you put that thing on and pump it up, it's like you can run.
Yeah.
You can literally, you can't run a sprint or anything like that, but you can run and you can at least hit the ropes.
Yeah.
And man, I used that thing. And so 8 weeks after I broke my leg, had surgery, knee replacement, all that shit, metal rod putting in, pins and screws in my ankle, I was back in the ring.
Man, that's crazy.
Yeah, tagging with Ricky.
Because
Ricky called me up. He's like, "Hey, you need to make some money." And I was like, "Yeah, you damn right I do." He goes, "Well, come on." He goes,
Let's tag team and I'll do all the work. And I'm like, okay. I was like, that sounds fair since I did all the damn work when we were tagging and you just stood there holding up the ring post. He made the hot tag. I did the whole work. I'd start the match and the whole match, and then I would hot tag to him, and then he would finish the match up. Like, he had probably about 2 minutes of work, and then that was it.
Oh, he's played Robert Gibson, wasn't he? He was.
Okay, he was making more. Yeah, he was making $500, and I was only making 100, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you went back to ECW then in 1999, and this is the run most people know you for. Obviously from ECW, and you came in as Kid Cash, and obviously that's obviously a nod to Kid Rock. What was Paul Heyman? I mean, did he look at you and think you look like Kid Rock? Was he just a fan of Kid Rock? I know Kid Rock was hot that time, but where'd that come about?
I didn't even know who Kid Rock was. I'm if anybody who really knows me truly knows that I'm a, you know, heavy metal kind of guy. I mean, yep. I've listened to heavy metal my entire life. You know, I even like that Scandinavian metal, you know, kind of stuff. So, rap was one thing that I was definitely not into. And, but what happened with that is I was actually came back in 98. They just didn't do any TV with me for months because the name they were still trying to come up with, because I went back to using the name David Jericho whenever, you know, I got hurt. So yeah, from there, you know, they were like, okay, well, we can't use Jericho and everything. So I just did a bunch of reintroduction to the crowd matches, you know, like a lot of dark matches, just getting reintroduced to the crowd. So they remembered my face anyway.
Right.
So we went to, no, I was still Davey. No. Yeah, that's right. They brought me back in still as Davey Morton Tyler Jericho.
Okay.
Yeah. They brought me. Yeah. I remember the it's like four or five matches. I know that they were still calling me out Davey Morton Tyler Jericho, but we were in, Poughkeepsie, New York. And you know that they used to do the production of that show in Paul's basement.
Right, correct. Yep.
Now we're talking about the 90s now. Okay. Yep. So no up to date, you know, technology here. So they still use the two VCRs and the two VHS tapes. Remember how they used to do that? You know,
yep.
You would,
yep.
You know, film, you know, record one using another. Well, yep. Usually whenever that happened, you had to have your TV on a certain channel. Well, with that, they had theirs tuned into MTV. So I did a match. I did a match. What was it? The ECW Arena against Easy Money. Mm-hmm. And that was the night they really started kind of pushing me a little bit right there. They were like, you know, this guy's a standout. I did this Hurricanrana. We call it the Rana bomb. He goes to power bomb me off the top ropes. Then I cut a Hurricanrana in the middle of the ring. And that's what I used to pin him with. So after that match, I was the last match. We were actually the main event on that show. So at the end of the match, I stood up on the ropes and did the whole hands in the air thing. And my hair was in my face. I had really long hair back then. And my hair was all up in my face and everything like that. So right at the end of that, the video cut off because that was the end of the tape. Well, when that happened, the MTV kicked on and it was Kid Rock singing that song, Cowboy.
Right.
It was a downshot of him. Kind of the same way that they did me, but mine was more of an on, you know, straight ahead shot. His was a little bit more of a down where he was looking up into the camera, and Joey Styles looked over and says, "That's fucking David Cash," and they was like, "God damn, they look a lot alike, don't they?" And they was like, "Yeah, they do." So they actually rewound it a few times. Just to see the comparison, you know, and they was like, damn, if so, those two guys look just alike. And so next thing you know, I came back to Poughkeepsie. We were sitting there talking and chilling before the show. And Tommy Dreamer comes walking through our little crowd saying hello to everybody. And he was like, hello, little Guido. Hello, David Cash. How are you? And I was like, fine. And so he walks by me. And he stops and he turns around and goes, by the way, you are no longer Davey Morton Tyler Jericho. I was like, I'm not. And he goes, no. And I was like, who am I now? He goes, you are now Kid Cash. And I was like, okay. And he goes, so we talked about it, and you should go to like Hot Topic or something like that and get you some like kind of baggy pants where your underwear shows, and let, you know, maybe find you a fedora or something, you know, to wear and something to look like Kid Rock. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So he walks away, and I'm like, who the fuck is Kid Rock? You know? And everybody's like, you don't know who Kid Rock is? I was like, no, I don't know who the fuck Kid Rock is. So Jason Knight was a very good friend of mine back then. He pulls me to the side. He takes me right outside to their car. And he was like, this is Kid Rock. So he already had the tape in it and everything. It was like the 8-track tape. You know, yeah. Not the 8-track, but the cassette tape, you know? Uh-huh. Yeah, so he's playing it and everything. And I'm like, bah, with the bah, the bang, ding, ding. And I was like, okay, that sounds pretty cool. That's not bad, you know? And I was like, okay, whatever. It's like, what's this guy look like? You know, so they showed me pictures of him and everything. And I was like, damn. I was like, well, we do kind of look a little bit alike, but I don't know. I was like, I'm older than he is, so I guess he looks like me, you know?
Yeah, there you go.
You know, so. Yeah, so that's how it all started. The very next week, when we went home, I went to Hot Topic at the mall, and I bought some black pleathery baggy pants, and I bought some white boxer shorts, and I had my girlfriend embroider Kid Cash in the waistline of them. And then I just bought me a couple of cool shirts, you know, and went and bought a fedora. No, I didn't buy a fedora. I remember Chili Willie gave me one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Chili Willie was a good friend of mine from back in the North Carolina days. So he wore a fedora, and he had like two or three of them. So he brought one for me there, and that's where that came from. And very next week.
That's crazy how stuff like that works out sometimes. Just fluke stuff.
Yeah,
and it's what you're most known for probably now. It's just, that's wild. And there's a whole story about you and. I don't even know how you say it. Bo Dup, however you say it. Bo Dup. Where he broke your jaw. And you already had some, I think you already had heat with him because being a little stiff and everything else. And tell me all about that between you and Bo.
Well, that was the problem. And it wasn't just me. It was a lot of people. He was just young. You know, he was a young guy, but he was huge. He was a huge man.
Yeah.
And he's about 300 pounds. And, but he would get so jacked up, and he would just, you know, not that he meant to hurt anybody. You knew that he didn't mean to, cause he's just such an innocent guy, but damn, he would hurt you, man. I mean, that guy would like give you a fucking power slam and just crush you, you know? But we had a set up for the pay-per-view, we were having in Birmingham, Alabama, and, it was me and Nova. Me and Nova were a tag team at this point. And Chetty was still in our corner. He had hurt his back really bad. And so he couldn't wrestle. But we were wrestling Danny Dorn and Roe Kill, and then Simon Diamond and Joe. What the fuck was his ring name? Joe Dorgan, you know. Shit.
Who's that?
Johnny Swinger.
Oh, yeah, Johnny Swinger, yeah.
Yeah, Johnny Swinger. So it was like a four-way tag. Mm-hmm. We were setting up, and the Dups were trying to get into that tag team match, you know, supposedly on the TV version of it.
Yeah.
So they were going to do a run-in on one of our matches we had in Atlanta. And but the deal was they were just going to run in and just clobber us and throw us out. Everybody. There was no extra moves involved or anything like that. It was just clobber, throw out, clobber, throw out. And then they were going to get on the microphone and talk some shit, and then that was it. Okay. So, but what happened was they come in, they clobber me first, and then they clobber Nova. Well, they throw Nova out, they throw Dorian out, they throw Roadkill out, and they throw everybody else out. But next thing you know, I'm thinking, okay, well, I guess I better throw myself out. So I started rolling towards the ropes, and, dude grabs me, picks me up, and he fucking just drives me through the mat with a slam. And then about that time, here comes Marty over, what's his name, off the top ropes. And he was doing a frog splash. Well, the problem was he was a very long man. You know, he was a very long guy, you know. Yeah. So when he did that extra little pump in the air, man, it just extended him out. Well, his knees come crashing down into the side of my face. And broke my jaw in two places. So I knew something was wrong because it just didn't, my bite wasn't right, you know, and I heard something pop, but it didn't hurt. There was no pain involved at all until like hours later. But yeah, I was like, something's just not right here. And I knew that he had broken my jaw because my teeth weren't lining up right. And I couldn't really talk. I was talking like, cause I couldn't move my jaw.
Yeah.
And I just, all hell flew through. I just like, man, I'm gonna fuck this motherfucker, man. So they get to the back and, he's already getting chewed out by Tommy Dreamer and Paul Heyman. But you know, whenever you got the trucks and the TV and stuff, you got, you know, all those connections and cables and stuff, you know, that go from the truck to the satellite to the, you know, to the power boards and all that stuff. Really big, you know, wire, you know, really, really big cable. And the connectors are really heavy, you know, that really heavy fire retardant plastic, you know.
Yeah.
And when they pigtail them in and they plug them in, you know. I was walking back through there and Nova was like, Davey man, calm down, Davey. Calm down. I was like, fuck this motherfucker. I'm tired of this son of a bitch fucking hurting everybody, you know? And I was just like, fuck this shit. And I've just seen one of the big boxes and I seen that on top of it. I just grabbed it. And whenever I walked through the curtain, man, I walked right up to him and I cracked him as hard as I could with that damn thing. And I tried to get a couple more shots in it, but, you know, of course it got broken up immediately and stuff. But, yeah, he felt bad about it, but and I understand that he felt bad about it, but we had been complaining to him like for months and months, like, dude, calm the fuck down.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, this is a work. You know, I like it stiff, but I don't like to be hurt. Yeah. You know, I mean, he did a spine buster on me and it literally ruptured my fucking intestinal tract.
Jeez.
It did. It didn't rupture. What it did, it twisted my intestinals around each other, so they overlapped. I had to go to a deep tissue massage parlor for like 3 days straight when I got home because I couldn't eat anything. I mean, every time I tried to eat, I would get a bite in, and I just couldn't eat another bite, you know. And so yeah, they had to massage my intestines back in line. Wow. So that, yeah. So that was the reason why we had so much heat. It was just, the guy was just so fucking careless whenever he got like in that moment, you know, that adrenaline would fly and he just didn't know how to control it, you know, but he was hurting a lot of people, and not just me, but he was hurting other people too.
Yeah. Yeah. But like you said, you broke the jaw, but man, you like with your leg, man, you didn't miss any bookings.
I didn't miss a night. I wrestled the very next night. I went that night after the show and went to four different hospitals. There was a flu epidemic that going around down there that was killing people.
Yeah.
And so they didn't consider a broken jaw a life-threatening issue.
Yeah.
So they gave me some medicine, sent me home with a couple of numbers to a couple of orthopedic surgeons. I called them through the night. And then about 5 o'clock in the morning, I got a call back. I had to sit up in the bed because I couldn't lay down, you know, because I was still bleeding a little bit, you know. And so I had to sit up. I fall asleep. You know, next thing you know, the phone rang. Talked to the guy. He said, if you can get to Marietta in about an hour, then I'll work on you before my clients come in. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, cool. You know, he goes, you just got to sign me a couple of 8x10s and take a couple of pictures. I was like, not a problem. No problem. So I went up there. I mean, he had worked on Diamond Dallas Page, Scott Steiner, Rick Steiner. So he had their pictures up with them and everything like that.
Yeah.
So I got there. He hooked me right up, fixed my jaw, didn't even charge me. Yeah, he wired my jaw shut right there, man. Wired it shut, got it in place, signed him a couple autographs, gave me two prescriptions of liquid morphine. And I went back to the hotel, caught a nap. Woke up, took a shower, pulled all that bloody cotton out of my face and my jaw and everything. I hooked up with Jerry Lynn. We drove to Cornelia, Georgia, and wrestled an independent wrestling show for Bill Barron's.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah. So after that show was over with, we came back to Atlanta. Very next morning, I drove all the way from Atlanta to Birmingham, Alabama, and we did the pay-per-view. And then from there, I drove all the way back to Johnson City, Tennessee.
That's it. Nuts. Yeah. Not, I mean, yeah, that's crazy. Obviously, one of your highlights in ECW was it had to be when you won the television title. You beat Rhino. You held it for a few weeks. How did you find out? What did you know? Was it building to that you were going to have a little short run with the title? Did you find out that day?
Actually, we held the title for a couple of months because I didn't lose it. Yeah, till like February of the next year. I won it early, late of the year before.
Right.
And then I didn't lose it until like February of the next year because we were going through the Christmas vacation and all that stuff. Yeah. But they told me that night, and it stemmed from where I broke my jaw. Broke my jaw, they were just so fucking, they just impressed Paul so fucking much that he was just like amazed that I took no nights off, and I basically threatened him to quit my job if he didn't put me on the pay-per-view after taking me off of it. He had already taken me off, and I already had a replacement, but I showed up and I told him, I was like, I'm here to work, man. He goes, you're fucking hurt. And I'm like, I'm here to fucking work. You don't work me, I quit. And he was like, wow, okay. So that, and then it wasn't, I think it was a month later, my grandmother, who is the one who raised me, my whole adolescent life, you know, through my teenage years and everything like that, I graduated, you know. But she died while I was on the road. And so when I got to the building, I found out, and Paul was like, we got somebody going to take you straight to the airport. We're going to fly you out. And I was like, why? And he was like, you got to be home for your family. And I was like, she's dead. And he goes, yeah, no, you got to, get home. And I was like, they're not going to bury her or even have a family night till probably Monday or Tuesday of next week. And he was like, okay. And I was like, I'm going to stay here and work. And that just impressed him. You know, hell, it even made him cry.
Yeah.
You know, he teared up. And he was like, are you serious? And I was like, I'm very serious. There's nothing I can do. What can I do? There's nothing. She's dead, you know. And I'm here to work. Let's work. And then right after that, I mean, it was like the very next week, we were at the Hammerstein Ballroom, and he was going and laying out the show and everything with everybody. And then the next thing you know, he got to my little spot. I was wrestling Rhino. And then it went from being a whole lot more than what it was earlier that day to me winning the title, you know. And then I was like, oh, okay, well, that's cool. And I said, you know, I even told him, I was like, you don't have to put the title on because you feel sorry for me. And he laughed his ass off. And he goes, no, he goes, I'm putting the title on because I'm fucking impressed by you.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. That's all I need to hear right there. He goes, man, he goes, you're one of the few people I've ever met in this entire sport that can be hurt, you know, not only physically, but mentally. And you keep your mind on your job and you do your job to the best of your ability and you have no flaws doing it. And he's like, I gotta reward that. And yeah. I was like, well, thank you, you know.
Yeah, I got to think, man, through all that, you know, losing your grandma, the injury. I mean, I would think wrestling was the escape you needed, right? It was.
Oh, it, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Help take your mind off those things. And
yeah. Yeah. Just being on the road and having to deal with airports and rental cars and hotels and getting to the building on time and going over your matches and then finding food. You know, yeah, absolutely. People don't realize what we have to deal with when you're full time.
Yeah,
you know, wrestling the independent shows on the weekends is one thing, but when you're signed to a contract and you're 365 days a year,
yeah.
I mean, you only have legitimately 2 days off from work.
Yeah,
legitimately 2 days off. And then a lot of those times you only get one because by the time, you know, if you have a bad travel day,
yeah,
you might not get home until midnight.
Yeah.
You know, I've left the damn hotel at 5 o'clock in the morning, got on the plane at 6 o'clock in the morning, and didn't get home till midnight.
Yeah.
Then I get that whole day off the next day. You got to catch up on everything, pay all your bills, go do, you know, clean your clothes, everything you got to do in one day. Then you got to hit the road again, you know. So, you know, just that busyness, that go, did it helped keep that whole thing on, you know, off my mind.
Yeah. That's one of the things that got a lot of guys, got a lot of guys in trouble. cost them their life, because they, when their careers were done, they didn't know what how to stop. Do. Yeah, what yeah. do you do when I'm used to this schedule, this routine, this new town every night? What do I do when I don't have to do that? And
it's weird. It's weird. It is weird. I mean, but here's the deal: you got to be a fucking idiot coming into this. No, thinking that this is going to last for as long as you think it's going to last.
Right. Yep.
Your body just can't do it no more. Your body is going to get to a point, you know, if you make it through 10 years, you're done. Mm-hmm. You're done. Your body is taking a toll. I was very blessed. I guess because of the way I worked out and kept my body in condition and stuff. I made 30 years out of this business. And I'm, 25 of it was on television. Mm-hmm. From TNA to the little bit of stint in WCW to WWE. And then, mm-hmm. you know, of course, you know, it's ECW twice, you know, TNA twice. You gotta stay as in best shape as you can, but you also got to remember how long do you think your body can really do this? And right. here's another thing. How long are you going to look the way you look? Mm-hmm. You know, you might be back in my day, I had the long hair, the baby blue eyes, the body, the tattoos. All the women love me. But then I turned 40 and I started looking in the mirror. I'm like, I don't look like I used to.
Yeah, it's a cosmetic business, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's yeah. full of cosmetic. You know, yep. the body and shape was still there. The condition was still there, but the lines were there. Yep. You know, yep. the mm-hmm. sagginess in the cheeks were there. The new young kid that just got hired at Jesse Source at 21 years old, you know, pretty boy. All these young guys, I'm looking about, you know, 20 years later, I'm looking around me and I'm like looking in the dressing room and I don't know any of these people.
Yeah.
And they're all brand new. And the writing was on the wall. You know, I saw the writing on the wall about 5 years before I retired.
Yeah.
And the only reason why I lasted those 5 years is because people just kept signing. Mm-hmm. At first I said I was going to stop at the age of 40. Well, when I was at 40, I re-signed another deal. So I went to 45. And that's when that deal ended. There was another one that was about ready to sign. And then I was like, yeah, all right, just one more time. But I'm not going to do, I only want to do like maybe 1 or 2 years. So yeah. that's what I did. I did 2 years and then that was it. And I was like, I can't do it anymore. Mentally, I can't do it anymore because I don't want to do this anymore. You know, when mm-hmm. you wake up in the morning and you don't have that feeling like you can't wait to get on the road, it's time to stop.
Yep, absolutely.
I had to drag the last 2 years of my career. I had to drag myself to the shows. I dreaded it. I became an asshole because I didn't want to be there. I was just, you know, it just made you aggravated. You know, you were short-tempered with everybody because, you know, I wasn't happy. This is not what was making me happy anymore. And then I was also being used. You know, every veteran is going to get to that point where he's going to be just a good hand mm-hmm. to get the new guys over. Because using you with your name is going to mean a whole lot more getting them over. So you quit winning titles. You're still in the main event, but you're winning no more titles. You're not doing the number, you know, the top promos anymore. They're not giving you all the promo time. They're giving it to the young guy. And then you run an angle with this guy for a month and for 4 weeks straight on television, he beats you. And then you go to the pay-per-view and he beats you. You see what I'm saying? Uh-huh. Those are the things that are the writings on the walls for people. Yeah. You know, you can look at it and be like, okay, I've been, these son of a bitches wanted to sign me to just basically get these young boys over.
Yeah.
And that was the only reason why TNA, they signed me that the first time that I worked for them and we had such a bad relationship. You know, they had me working AJ Styles, you know, when nobody had ever heard of him. They had me working
Christopher Daniels when people had just barely heard of him. You know, nobody mm-hmm. really knew Chris. They just knew him from like Ring of Honor, mm-hmm. you know, low key. Nobody knew the fuck he was until, you know, that little bit in Ring of Honor, then the TNA. Well, when you're wrestling a guy who's a former, you know, ECW World Television Champion and a five-time NWA World Tag Team Champion, you know, a guy with, you know, 10, you know, at that time, 10, 11 years under his belt as a veteran, you know, that's what they wanted. They just wanted that. But I wasn't ready for that. I didn't want it at that time. So I left that company and I went to basically to back to WWE and actually signed a full deal contract this time, you know. And of course, they put the Cruiserweight title on me, you mm-hmm. know, and they built me up in a nice tag team with Jamie Noble. And, mm-hmm. you know, they ran me pretty good. And so when I went back to TNA, they were like, hey, we want to re-sign you. I'm like, okay, well, here's the deal. You know, what's I want you to just tell me the straight up truth. Well, by this time, I was in my 40s, mm-hmm. you know, and I was like, okay, you know, this is winding down. So the guys, I mean, they were straight up with me at this time. You know, they were like, listen, you know, we're not wanting to put any titles on you. We just want you to help us out. And I'm like, okay, well, here's the deal. I don't mind doing that. I wish you, you know, the first time we could have had a much better relationship if you'd just told me that flat out. Because here's the deal. You want me to do that for you, then you're going to have to pay me more. Just straight up. So this contract that we're about ready to sign, we're going to have to renegotiate this because the price now has gone up. And they did. So I didn't complain. I didn't bitch. I didn't complain. Now, the only time that I did complain the second time was when they weren't paying me.
Yeah. yeah.
The paycheck stopped coming in. So Kid Cash quit working. You know, yeah. I just sat at home and they would call me up like, hey, where you at? We're waiting on you. Oh, I'll be there in a few minutes. I'm still at the hotel. Yeah. I'm at my house laying on the couch. I haven't gotten paid in like 2 months. So, yeah, not coming for another damn shot. And then they realized it. So then, you know, of course I had to, you know, whenever they actually fired me because I wanted my money. So they're like, oh, you didn't come to work. And I'm like, I'm not going to, not until you start paying me and you back pay me what you owe me. And I have a contract with you. And they were like, well, you know, yeah, we're just going to go ahead and release you. I'm like, okay, not a problem. You can release me all you want. Here's the problem. I'm going to sue you. And that's what I had to do. Wound up having to sue him after I left and got my money.
Yeah. That during that last ECW run, when ECW was coming to an end, did you see the signs? Did you know it was coming? Or did you buy, he'll hear Paul, you know, telling, hey, I'm going to do this. I'm negotiating. I'm going to LA. I'm trying this. I mean, where did you fall?
I thought something was going on. I wasn't exactly sure, but you got to understand, I wasn't like a lot of those guys up in ECW because I ran around with Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson for years before I went there.
Yeah,
they taught me not only how to wrestle, but they taught me the business and the signs of the business when the business is about to ready to go bad or go good, you know. Yeah. And I started seeing things here and there. Paul wasn't making it to the shows, even the TV tapings in Philadelphia, you know. He's doing like other projects, you know, like Rollerball and stuff like that. Okay. Yep. We're having money problems here. I mean, but here's one thing. I will say this out loud and very proud. Paul never owed me a dime. He paid me all the way up until the company shut the doors. And when I needed a release from him to go to work for WCW, that's when the paycheck stopped. I mean, of course, you know, I'd signed after I'd just gotten a check, and I told him, I was like, well, you know, the company's buried, and WCW wants me, but they want a hard copy proof. So I had to sign over, he sent me a little form, and I'd signed over everything is paid in full, and he don't owe me another dime. So I signed that. He sent me the release, and I sent it to WCW, and I was doing Thursday Night Thunder the very same weekend.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we focus primarily here on your ECW career, but, you know, we've talked a little bit. I mean, you had a great career before, after everything else. I mean, we've touched on a little bit, right? You worked for TNA, you held the X Division title, the tag titles, you know, a couple times with with the future Lance Archer, who's a big time, big star now.
Yeah.
You like we said, you worked for WWE, you held the Cruiserweight title. You've worked all over the world. You've even been, fought some MMA fights and everything else.
Yeah.
You've done all these things, but yet, primarily you're still remembered for ECW. Does that ever bother you, or have you kind of learned to embrace it? That's okay.
I don't even think about it like that. It doesn't bother me at all. It's nice to know that they even remember you,
I mean,
one thing about it, look, man, I was never the biggest guy. I never had the greatest physique. I wasn't the greatest wrestler. But the thing about it is there's so many guys in this business that has been in this business that were very talented, and they did the best that they could with their look or with their talent or wherever, or really with the promoters. I think at the end of the day, we all know that you're only as over as the promoter allows you to be, but I've seen so many guys that when they did leave the business, nobody remembered them. So for me, I'm just happy that people do remember me, because I was a standout in the light heavyweight division, but I wasn't a standout like, say Rey Mysterio wound up being, or even Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, because all of us ran together back in the day, and we were all in Japan. We were all in Mexico. We were all, traveling the country and other places around the world, traveling together, working together. We were all the same height. Dean Malenko was probably Ray was the shortest completely, but then it was Dean, then it was Chris, then it was me, then it was Eddie, So, yeah, I mean, for people to even remember, that I was there is a pleasure, So, yeah, I appreciate it. I don't have a problem with it at all.
Yeah, I mean, ECW is the right, to me, it's kind of the right place to be known for, because that passion is always there. I mean, you still hear the chants and everything. I mean, you have so many territories that were so great that, people don't, it's still, some of these promotions aren't held like ECW is. So, no. I guess, lots of people have been known for less. I mean, you were there, you had it, you were on national TV and pay-per-views and everything else. So that's,
Well, if there's ever any question, just Google it.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. You're on Peacock.
I'm immortalized in the, in the history of wrestling and Google.
So that's right.
Or YouTube.
There you go.
Find anything.
Yeah. So who do you stay in contact with wrestling? Are you still close with anybody and still friends with really good friends with anybody?
Rob Van Dam and I still keep in touch. Lance and I, from time to time, we keep in touch. Jesse Sorensen from time to time. I mean, this is not like a monthly thing or anything like that. About once or twice a year, but anybody else? No, not really. Unless they comment or something on Facebook or Instagram or something on a picture or something like that, whatever.
Yeah.
Other than that, you got in the wrestling business, you're like a family because you're always together.
Yeah.
You're together more with your wrestling family than you are your own family. But here's the thing. Once all of that is over with, we all go our own way where we came from. You know what I'm saying? I think there's probably only a handful of people in the wrestling business that stayed like absolutely best friends until the day they died, but people just kind of, they separate and they go their own way and live their own lives and do their own thing. And eventually time takes its toll and, you just kind of quit reaching out like you used to.
Yeah. Do you ever still make appearances, do any conventions or anything like that?
Yeah, I do some stuff, conventions, still do some seminars and here from time to time, I'll do just like a personal appearance or something like that, but mostly like appearances, seminars. I don't do any wrestling anymore.
Yeah.
Just don't care to, if they did, then my price is kind of high. So, cause it's just not worth it for me to get back in the ring unless it's worth it to me,
Absolutely. Yeah. So how fans want to keep kind of follow you, keep track if you do any appearances or anything? What's the best way for them to do that?
Just like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. That's about it.
All right. Sounds good. Yeah. Well, I appreciate your time. Like I said, we focus primarily on the ECW stuff, but man, we can, I think we could talk for hours just on your other side. I probably could talk for hours just on Ricky Morton alone. And but I appreciate your time coming on here and talking with us about your career. I always say that, man, I still think you're underappreciated. I know you've done a lot of things, but you know, I don't think people talk enough about you, man. You're talented. And
well, thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, you know, I mean, the thing though, the knowledge is still there. And, and it's, people talk about a lot of people from that era and sometimes you're forgotten. And I don't mean that, you know, in a disrespectful, bad way.
No.
I just think you should be, maybe you should be spoken in the breath of a few others that you don't get, it was an honor to talk to you.
I mean, something like that'd be cool, but that's
it is what it is.
It is what it is. I'm not really, it's nothing that kind of, keeps me up at night, Earl.
Absolutely.
So I have a great life, I mean, when I left, I was already educated before I left, so I was already in the construction industry before I even became a wrestler, so I just got my degrees and stuff like that while I was wrestling, did a bunch of online degrees and stuff. And I immediately left wrestling and immediately went right back into construction as a project manager, so of a big commercial we're a nationwide construction company. We build high rises and interstate bridges and malls. And, we build pretty much anything that can be built, it's a great living. I make just as much money doing that as I did as a wrestler. So a
lot for your bumps, isn't it?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I work in an office and I don't have to put my body through any more of abuse. And I got beautiful grandkids now.
Yeah.
Spend more time with them. And, when I left wrestling, it was weird at first because you're so used to having to leave. You're so used to wrestling on the weekends while everybody else is barbecuing, and you're so used to being home during the week while everybody else is at work. So it was weird at first, but once I opened myself up and said, this is it, this is my life now, I'm not going back. Let's just get back to being a normal person. So that's what I did. And I wouldn't trade it for the world right now. I really wouldn't. I mean, I love my time off. I love knowing that on the weekend I could crack open my grill and just start cooking and have some people over if I want to, not miss out on any friends. Because there's another thing. Your friends in the business are your friends while you're in the business.
Right.
But all those people that you knew before, that were your best friends from high school and all that, well, just like anything else, you lose contact with those guys because you're so busy as a wrestler, and then whenever you retire, you lose contact with all your wrestling buddies. Okay. Some because, you just lose the contact, or some because, they just really didn't like you to begin with and they don't give a shit if they still talk to you or not,
Yeah.
It's that kind of scenario. But whenever you come back to the real world, you are friendless. For a while. You're like, okay, I live in a different state now. I don't even live in Virginia anymore. So I don't even haven't talked to any of my old school friends for probably 20 years. My wrestling buddies, they're off wrestling somewhere or they're retired and having their, living their lives and stuff like that. They don't want to talk on the phone anymore either. Like I don't, So I had to just sit back and kind of chill and think about it. And, started calling back my old buddies, from back in high school days. And it's like, those are your real friends. Those are your real friends. The ones in the wrestling business are friends. But when the light quits shining on you, they quit shining on you.
Yep.
And that's
part of the business. Because I mean, a lot of people, they work in a job for 20, 30 years. When they retire, they're still living in the same town with these guys that they worked with.
Yeah.
And it just continues on. I mean, your wrestling friends are from, whatever, all over the world. Who knows where they are? And it's not the same. It's,
my wrestling buddies, the closest one lives about 5 hours from me.
Yeah,
that's you know, so it ain't like we're going to get together for a barbecue. No.
Well, I feel like you've achieved more than some, because I mean, there's so many guys tragically couldn't readjust, couldn't step out. You know, whether you know they beat a tragic end, whether they're still out there trying to hang on to something from the past or whatever it is, man, you know, just couldn't readjust.
And I feel very proud of myself because of that. I mean, listen, I'm not going to lie to anybody. I've answered this same question over and over again for years. Yes, I did drugs just like anybody else did. Okay. But whenever I realized that I was starting to get a problem with them, I quit cold turkey and I've never been back since.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're talking 15 to 20 years ago. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't understand how some of these guys that even if they're still in the business, the thing about these guys is they don't get booked near as much. Mm-hmm. It's like once your star starts fading a little bit, your bookings fade bigger than shit.
Yep.
You know, some of these guys that were on TV, whenever they left TV, yeah, they were that fresh new thing fresh off of TV. So they booked the shit out of you for like a year, maybe 2 years. They'll book, everybody will want you. But then after that's over with, nobody really gives a shit unless you want to come down on your price, unless you want to do a benefit show or something like that, you know. And then that's, you know, I just didn't want to go through that. I seen my friends do it, and I was like, you know what? If I go back to doing that, I will be backsliding in my career.
Yeah.
I don't want to end my career this way. So I'll just go ahead and end it now. And that's what I did. Yeah.
Such a peculiar business for so many different reasons, but it is. But it is
a cutthroat business that you can't let your guard down for one fucking minute.
No.
And you gotta do that for 30 years.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And tell me, and then after you do, tell me who your true friends really are.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, all those times you worked with injuries and whatever else. Part of it had to be, you know, preserving your spot. You had to,
and that's why I worked.
no other job, man. Any other job, you know, any other career, you get hurt, you're entitled to take your time and have that job waiting for you.
No, if you do it in wrestling, then somebody's taking your spot by the time you came back.
Yeah. The show goes on, brother.
The show goes on.
It's a whole nother discussion of why it's claimed so many lives because of these things. And I mean, that's a whole nother tangent we could go down for hours.
I think some of those people that lose their lives and get all hung up, you know what? I honestly feel for them, but I don't, you know, because you have every single person in this business has a know-how to act. You know, you know what right and what wrong is. Everybody knows that. So, okay. Yeah, you might have to take your pills while you're wrestling to get through the days. I get it. But if you're not wrestling anymore, why are you still? You're just a drug addict now.
Yep.
Yeah. And I refused. That was one thing I refused to be because I saw it too many times.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing I had to do was look across the damn, you know, dressing room with Buff Bagwell or somebody like that.
Yep.
You know, just peeled up off of their fucking head.
Yep.
You know, somebody that didn't take hardly near the bumps that I took.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that wasn't their style.
Yep.
The biggest thing they might do is the chart buster and a drop kick. You know, I was getting power bombed through fucking tables out of the ring, you know, diving off of fucking balconies, you know, and stuff into tables and going through tables, being thrown out of the ring by Mike Awesome, landing on a concrete floor.
Yeah.
You know, diving out of the ring and doing moves and people missing me and hitting the concrete floor. Yep. You know, so I don't understand how some of these guys get so drugged up that they can't deal with life, you know? And I'm like, I just don't get it. I mean, whenever I look myself in the mirror, that the moment that I knew that enough was enough, I looked in the mirror and I was like, what the fuck are you doing? Yep. Why are you doing this to yourself? You're fucking, you know, aging yourself by taking all these damn drugs. You know, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
Suck it up, be a man, and tough it out. Take your BC powder and keep moving fucking forward. And that's what I did.
Yeah, well, that's yeah. Whew, I guess that's a place to wrap it.
Yeah.
It's a. I mean, like I said, I'm glad. You know, you come out on the other side. You're, you know, got a. It's like, you know, a whole, whatever you want to call it, a second chapter in your life beyond wrestling. And it's, you know, maybe, you know, obviously for you, it's, I mean, I think, you know, you sound like it's exceeded your wrestling life. It's your, you know, even happier for it. But as we, you know, as we can tell from what we talked, you got a lot of good memories from wrestling.
And, you know, I didn't do the best business in the world, but I didn't do the worst business in the world, you know, and I look at it like I'm very happy and content with where my career went. You know, I'm a guy from Waynesboro, Virginia. Nobody's ever heard of that town. I'm not a second or a third generation wrestler. This kind of just dropped in my lap one day. And I just decided that I would rather do that than be a pipe welder.
Yep.
So I had to put everything I had into it to make something of it, you know? Yeah. And that's exactly what I did. I mean,
yeah. Well, you clearly made the most of your opportunities. Like we talked about, whether it's, you know, working through injuries or whatever it is, I mean, you took the ball and ran with it, and you came out better on the other side. And
absolutely,
yeah. And like I said, I appreciate your time talking to us and talking with us and talking about your career. There's so much more. I mean, we did, like I said, we didn't even touch on your WWE time and this and that because we focus on the ECW. But man, there's so much more to your career. But we keep it ECW based on the show, so that is what it is. But David, we appreciate your time and appreciate you coming on and talking to us.
Absolutely, man. Call me anytime.
Support This Is Extreme and buy the This Is Extreme shirt. Show the world that you are part of the revolution and that you support our podcast and the history of ECW. Go to tinyurl.com/ECW pod shirt and buy yours today.
All right, ECW fans, welcome back to This Is Extreme. I am Dave Dynasty, your host. Thanks to Kid Cash, David Cash, for coming on and giving us that interview. Again, great talking to him and lots of stories. A fun guy to talk to. And we'll have David back on in the future because he has a lot more he can talk about. And I'd like to have him on my other podcast, Wrestling Nostalgia, to talk about some of his non-ECW career. Because, again, there's a lot to talk about there. The guy's done a lot, accomplished a lot. And like I said in the interview, I think he's an underappreciated talent in wrestling. So I'd like to maybe help open a few more eyes, man. And so go out there and watch some Kid Cash stuff, man. He's a great worker, great guy, great personality, and just a lot of fun and a positive attribute to the wrestling business. Make sure you subscribe to us on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. And if the option is there, give us a rating and review. It helps us in the algorithms. Follow us on social media. We're on X. Still, I just can't post anything at the moment, but you can follow us there, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at ECW Pod. Given my perils with X, maybe you should make sure you follow us on all those so that you don't miss anything at all. You can follow me personally on X at the Dave Dynasty. That account's still open and active. And the best way to financially support the show is to buy one of our shirts. Go to tinyurl.com/ECW Pod shirt. And here you go. And that's the best way. And in 2 weeks, we'll have another podcast. So watch those social media outlets for an announcement on who that guest will be. I've already got lots of things brewing, some things scheduled, some really, really cool stuff that you're going to love to hear and see. So 2 weeks, new episode. But until then, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep it extreme.